are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Oh, my gosh. If he goes to Colorado, where does he go in drafts? Like, seriously, people
Second.
Will take him.
He goes right line Trout.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
At least our biggest troll, Matt Thompson, isn't on tonight.
This is kind of bullshit because, you know, just for Matt, I put a bunch of St. Louis Cardinal players on the rundown, and then he doesn't even fucking show up.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller, I guess.
So,
can he pitch, or?
Yeah.
I know. Can he pitch? Has he, you know, got a good ground ball rate, or?
I know he's got a good strikeout rate.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 170 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
Doing well. You know, baseball's kind of gearing up a bit. We have some trades going on in the mix here, and then winter meetings are starting next week. It's, you know, it's the off season, but things are starting to heat up a bit, and I'm very, very excited about it.
Yeah, I am as well. It's hot stove is actually starting to heat up a little bit. So maybe we'll actually have some major signings before Christmas time this year. And hopefully that'll give us plenty of time to kind of jump into our prep early on in the beginning of 2017. But we've got a lot of things to discuss. And joining us is a special guest, Tim Heaney of RotoWire. Tim, how you doing?
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller, I guess.
We are really excited to have you on and talk some off-season baseball. Tim, for those who don't know you, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, what you do in the fantasy industry, and then where people can reach you on social media?
Hey, guys. I'd worked for USA Today for a long time and KFFL.com for a while, and I just actually started working for RotoWire a few months ago. Don't know if you guys have heard of that little site.
Small name in the industry.
Up and coming.
It's definitely the hugest collection of content I've ever seen. That's one thing. That these people here are just crazy how they spew out so many articles. I can't keep up with it even. Took on a job as social media manager there, host a fantasy football podcast on Fridays, and you know, I do a little bit of writing here and there as well, and you know, behind the scenes stuff there. You guys can catch me on Twitter at @Tim_Heaney, Heaney. You can follow us on Twitter at RotoWire and on Facebook at RotoWire as well. Shoot us any questions there. Just go to the site, pour through the litany of things that are there. So I don't have time in this podcast to tell you everything we have, so I'm going to leave that to you.
Well, and I'm a huge fan of RotoWire, especially in their draft software. It's something I get every year, and I'm a baseball subscriber. I don't subscribe for the other sports, but for baseball, for me, like I'm totally down to put in like the $40 or something it costs for the entire baseball season to get all the information RotoWire has to offer. So I highly recommend it because I use that service.
It's definitely just goes above and beyond what you normally get for anything at that price. So absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely go out. Yeah, if you've never used draft software, it's really easy. You can put in your own projections. I love it. And then they've got a ton of other information, you know, friends of the podcast. Jason Collette writes over there. Paul Spohr podcasts over there. So we are big fans of RotoWire here at Friends of Fantasy Benefits.
Oh, thanks, guys. I really appreciate that. And obviously, we chatted on Twitter so many times. It's finally nice to have voices set to our angst against each other. So we're good to go with that.
Exactly. That's always the fun thing about like the podcast. It's like, oh, now I get to actually see what you sound like as opposed to just, you know, reading your tweets and harassing you on social media.
My cover's blown, that's for sure. So here goes nothing.
At least our biggest troll, Matt Thompson, isn't on tonight to, you know, kind of add more context to it.
Yeah. And you know what? This is kind of bullshit because, you know, just for Matt, I put a bunch of St. Louis Cardinal players on the rundown to chat about tonight. And then he doesn't even fucking show up.
Because he was offended. He was like, well, how dare we talk about so many Cardinals players? Like, there's more players in the league, Justin.
See, I would think the Cardinals fans would want to talk more about their team because, you know, they're like, they're the best of everything, right? Cardinals fans.
Not yeah, they have, they,
They've had a big slice of humble pie this holiday season with the Cubs and all that mess.
I'm a little bit glad about that, but, you know.
Aren't we all? Aren't we all?
I don't know. I was rooting for the Indians.
Oh, whatever.
But let's jump right into our kind of list of players and topics to talk about. We're going to talk about some recent Major League Baseball moves that have happened since the last podcast came out. First was something that happened like literally as we were recording last week, and that was Jason Castro signing with the Twins. Start with you, Tim. What is Jason Castro's fantasy value going forward now in Minnesota?
See, it's nice to have a guy like that who's had some power a little bit here and there, and he gets a lot of playing time. But he's only really a value in, you know, two catcher leagues for me at this point, just based on playing time. His best value for me is actually the impact he's going to have on Minnesota Twins pitchers, the way he frames pitches, the way he, you know, can work the round the plate, work the umpires like that. I'm actually more excited in fantasy leagues because of him to draft, you know, take a chance on more Minnesota Twins pitchers now. I mean, imagine putting him with 22-year-old Jose Berrios, who needs help around the plate. You know, it's just a very good get for the staff in general. I'm not all that excited about him, you know, as an actual catcher and hitter himself, but the impact he'll have on the staff is going to be pretty huge.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, fairly similar. Between the two Twins catchers last year, Kurt Suzuki and, you know, John Ryan Murphy, I think they combined to hit about 200. So, I mean, this is obviously an upgrade offensively for them. From a fantasy sense, though, I think that, you know, Tim is on the right track. You know, in two catcher formats, we have seen somebody like Jason Castro provide some power for us. I think that, again, once again, he'll hit double-digit home runs. But, you know, he's had pretty much one solid year in terms of being a starting catcher in fantasy. And since then, it's been, you know, I mean, you can't really bank on average from any fantasy catcher. But he just doesn't really offer much in on-base percentage either in OBP leagues. And, you know, the power isn't, you know, in my opinion, good enough for you to kind of bank on him even as a second catcher all the time. So in deeper formats as a two catcher guy, I don't mind taking a flyer, but there's some other guys, you know, Tony Walters being one of them, you know, that I like longer term for the whole season rather than just, you know, gambling on a guy like Castro.
And I think for me, he is really only, you know, two catcher AL only league viable for the most part. I mean, I guess in a 15 team two catcher league, he is somewhat viable, but I don't like the move in the stadium. I agree with you guys. I think the biggest impact this has for him, for the Twins is for, you know, their pitch framing and game calling behind the plate. I mean, this to me is a nice little kind of added bonus on Jose Berrios, who will probably be a little underdrafted coming into this year, considering how awful he looked coming into the season. Kyle Gibson is a guy I've always liked in deeper AL-only formats as a guy that I think has some upside at some point. Maybe this helps him out a little bit. Irvin Santana as well, Hector Santiago. I mean, they have a decent little rotation. It's nothing to write home about, but some interesting kind of AL-only guys. I think this adds a little bit to their value. But in terms of Jason Castro's own value as a catcher, I think he's going to go for more than I would want in a two catcher AL only. So I'm probably not going to get any shares of him this year.
Yeah, I will say this about him. You know, the career walk rate of 9.5%. That's pretty good. That makes me kind of want to see a little bit maybe more OBP league juice. You know, maybe second catcher there in mixed leagues. And if he can keep up the hard contact he had last year, 35.3% per Fangraphs, you know, that's something that could be interesting for that batting average. But I don't know. There's just a lot of holes in his offensive game. You definitely want to wait and see in that for until you rely on him a little bit more deeply.
Yeah, the 32%+ strikeout rate, you know, in a year where everybody got a boost in power, he didn't. So, and he hasn't had 400 plate appearances the last two seasons. So, I mean, to me, he's just, I mean, if he goes in the, you know, the $1 to $3 range in a 10 team AL only, I might be interested, but I got a feeling the move to Minnesota, people will look at him like he's the guy there and be willing to go $5 on him. And I just, to me, that's just too much. The big move that's happened this week, was Taijuan Walker and Ketel Marte being traded to the Diamondbacks for Jean Segura and Mitch Hanier. Did I say that right, Mike?
I'm not sure. I know nothing about
it. Matt's on the podcast. So we're not going to be correcting my pronunciation.
It's actually Haniger.
Damn it. Thanks.
Yeah, if I had the name in front of me, it would have been easier to actually be able to correct you. But
I watched some MLB.com video a couple days before the podcast just for me to confirm myself too, because I wasn't exactly sure. So I'm with you, buddy. I'm just trying to help the podcast.
I appreciate it.
We all appreciate it.
Yeah. I'm glad someone's trying to help this podcast. let's start with the Seattle side of it, or sorry, the Arizona side of it. Start with Walker and Marte. Mike, what are your thoughts? Are these two guys ending up in Arizona?
Yeah, the first thing that comes to mind is Walker, and you know, I think you and I had the same reaction to this, Justin, when we first saw it. Just like, you know, WTF, man! Like, what the hell is going on here? Because from a fantasy sense, you know, we did the 3-sport draft earlier in the offseason, and you know, Taiwan Walker was one of my selections because, you know, while his stats to date haven't been one, you know, that's been amazing for fantasy owners, he's always been a high pedigree guy, amazing fastball, and you know, some really good secondary offerings that could, you know, has the building blocks for him to be a, you know, a fantasy number two or three at some point. My issue is, you know, Arizona's pitching staff last year, you know, the starters at least were what, second worst in all baseball, over a 5 ERA for the season. Even Zach Greinke had a terrible year with this team. So you bring a fastball heavy guy and Walker, who doesn't really have a, you know, a changeup or anything to kind of fade away from left-handed batters. And I find that to be a really troublesome spot for him in Arizona and Chase Field, where batting average is certainly inflated. So as of right now, I think Walker has certainly took a dip in value, at least going into 2017. Could that present a buying opportunity? Maybe. But the way people draft drafted Shelby Miller last year, I'm not so sure. I think people are still going to expect a step forward for Walker, as I would if he was still in a better park. But the only thing that's kind of the saving grace here is that he's going to pitch in the National League. And, you know, I certainly like, you know, that in terms of his prospects for this year. For Kettle Marte, I just don't know about playing time yet. You know, we know he's a stolen base asset, and we don't really have a firm grip in terms of, you know, where I guess he could start at shortstop for them, but they use Chris Owings a ton. They still have Nick Ahmed around there. I you know, I don't know exactly what his role will be as of right now. If I was going to determine playing time from him, I would kind of pencil in maybe 300 at bats, and with that we could possibly get 20 stolen bases out of him. But the headliner here is Walker, and for me he's kind of taking a step down in value based on this move.
What are your thoughts on these two guys, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, Marte for me is just, you know, you chase the stolen bases, don't really expect much else. Of course, the better hitting park for him does kind of increase a little bit of intrigue there. But you know, you just kind of like buy him as a deep, you know, deep mixed league middle infield type of guy. See where he fits around the Arizona infield. See where he finds time there. Don't invest highly. Maybe, you know, just buy him for the stolen bases, and everything else is kind of just gravy there. But Walker, it's interesting what Mike kind of pointed out there. Obviously, it's kind of the flip of what they did with buying Shelby Miller high last year. Another kind of buying Taiwan Walker a tad low. Because obviously this, like I said, such a good pedigree to start out with. Results haven't really translated much. Leaving Seattle for Arizona, obviously down Green and Park, and then you have the canceling out of that with the losing the designated hitter. If people are going to let him fall into the final rounds, past kind of where Shelby Miller went last year in the middle rounds, I'm actually going to try to buy if I can make him like my fifth or sixth mixed league starter. He did a little bit of a change to his delivery last year, late in the year. Got some nice results in September. Still a good ground ball pitcher. You know, pounds the strike zone. Those peripherals are just so nice when you look below the ERA. For the most part, except for the home runs, I'll give you that part. But the command peripheral, strikeouts per nine, walks per nine, that's the stuff I kind of want to chase. And, you know, 24-year-old still kind of figuring himself out. There's something there that I'm actually want to buy into. You know, it's just a case where hopefully the rest of your draft room thinks that this move is really going to hurt him, and as a result, not really spend much for him. I would be all over that in a heartbeat if I can get him for like $2 or so in a mixed league.
The only problem with that is there's like always one guy like that, like holds on to prospect pedigree forever. Like there's always one guy in that draft room, and I just think that his name value is still there. People are going to look at the move to the National League for, you know, as a uptick, especially in the strikeout department. And I just cannot stand that park in terms of home runs and what it's moving from Seattle and their spacious ballpark to Arizona in that smaller ballpark in the dry air. I just worry about the home runs. I agree with you. If he's to fall like late, I'm going to take the risk because he's got just as much upside as virtually any young pitcher in the draft. But I don't see him dropping that far. and I just worry about the blow-up potential, especially at home. That's two. That means two stadiums within the division, that Colorado and Arizona. He's going to be a hard start, you know, week in and week out. Maybe he's one of those guys that you start on the road a little bit more than you start at home, if you have the ability to kind of stream him a little bit until we have some sort of sample size to see if he can pitch in Arizona. But I'm probably not going to have many shares of Taiwan Walker, which is sad for me because I really like the guy. As far as Marte, I would assume they move him and try to see if he could play second base, kind of fill the natural opening that Segura left. So I know there's a lot of talk about, well, where is he going to play? He wasn't very good last year. Arizona had no problem last year putting a player that wasn't very good the previous year and just giving him the second base job to run with it. And then they sell high on Segura and go out and get this guy. From a real baseball standpoint, I love this move from Arizona. I think Marte is a guy that people are going to sleep on, that you'll probably be able to get extremely late filling that middle infield slot if you kind of ignore it throughout the draft. So Marte is a guy I think I will end up with a number of shares in. Let's talk about the other side of this trade. Tim, what are your thoughts on Segura and Hanger are going to Seattle?
Obviously, the park downgrade, again, obviously, definitely something you want to worry about there. Last year was obviously the peak that we're never going to see again from Segura, I think. But there's obviously elements he's shown previously in his career that were not far off from there. 2013, he showed very similar skills there. So it wasn't like it was a total fluke, just kind of like an exaggerated form of it. Power speed will be there in some combination. You draft that 40 or so combined homers and stolen bases. Probably more so the stolen base side is the reality there. But he does hit too many ground balls to be a real consistent threat for anything close to 20 home runs without a lot of luck to it. His homer to fly ball rate was pretty outlandish for him, 13.5% compared to 8.6 career. The batting average may come down. That might stay up because of the ground balls a lot, though. But I would say something more so close to his career average of 280 there. Probably will still hit the top of the lineup. That's actually good for his runs total. Good middle of the order in Seattle there. So, if you buy Segura in the middle rounds of mixed leagues, I think I'm okay with that. I wouldn't necessarily write him off as a complete fluke. Just, beware some of the regression that he's going to have from that last year. I just think there's a little bit, especially in the power department, that's going to come down a little bit.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Segura moving over to Seattle?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the exact same way. The power will certainly come down. He's going to be hitting in a worse ballpark. And I think the average will certainly come down as well because, again, Chase Field is really good at inflating batting average. But I think that the Mariners brought him in because they need speed. They were 25th in stolen bases last year. They obviously have a lot of thump in that lineup, and they need somebody like Gene Segura to kind of set the table for them. So I don't think we'll see much regression in terms of the runs scored, even though that's something that kind of varies from year to year with players. But in terms of where he was going last year, Segura, compared to where he's going to be going heading into 2017, I think that's kind of what's going to present either a buying opportunity or kind of the biggest problem in terms of weighing what his value might be. I can't remember where he went in our offseason mock draft, but I'm sure if we were to redo the mock right now, he'd probably go somewhere in the third or fourth round, based on what he did last season. And I think that's a little too rich for me. There's some other stolen base guys that I can get later on that I can feel comfortable with. And, I'm not going to project him to hit 20 home runs. I think somewhere in the 10 to 12 or 13 is a little bit more fair. And, while, he's not going to hit 320 again, if you can project him to hit 280, that's still a very nice player, but still somebody I would feel more comfortable taking in the fifth or sixth round, or spend maybe, high teens or lower, $20 range on in auctions, as opposed to what he might go for in drafts as of right now. So I'm probably fading a bit on Gene Segura, but that's not because I don't like him. I think he's just still going to be looked at higher than I'm willing to kind of take him right now.
Yeah, no one has been a bigger fan of Gene Segura than me for the last few years. I mean, I've been huge, big all over this guy. I don't love this move for his value. Like you mentioned, the Mariners were like 24th, 25th in stolen bases last year. They're not a team that necessarily runs a huge amount. I don't think this is an indication necessarily that they want to run more. Maybe they run a little bit more, but I mean, are you really going to set him in motion in front of Cano and Cruz and risk getting an out when you've got a big bopper up? I don't know if that's going to be the case. So I hate this move for Segura because you know there's no way he's getting back to 20 home runs in Seattle's park. You know, and it's probably a little bit fluky, a little bit of juice balls to begin with. So, you know, Segura's a guy that I really liked coming in the last couple years. I really thought that he would bounce back, you know, from kind of the downs of his career that, you know, could have been attributed to the awful awful tragedy that he faced with it, losing his son at a very, very young age. So, you know, he got a new kind of change of scenery. Maybe that's something he really needed. He busted out. But I agree with you, Mike. I think that he's going to go in the third, fourth, fifth rounds. And I just don't think that I could pull the trigger on that. All right, let's talk about the last move that we're going to talk about today. Even though we have, like, breaking news, like, during the podcast, Chris Carter has been non-tendered by the Brewers.
Awesome.
Wow.
Awesome.
Like, 2 weeks ago, they were like, oh, we want to sign this guy to a long-term extension, and now they have non-tendered him.
Well, lucky for somebody.
Yeah, this makes me sad. For those who don't know, another guy I've been a huge, huge fan is Chris Carter. So, and leaving Milwaukee would probably be like the worst possible outlook for his fantasy value. Unless he ends up in a fantastic location like Colorado, who needs a first.
Oh my gosh, if he goes to Colorado, where does he go in drafts? Like, seriously, people
second,
will take
he goes
him
right behind Trout.
I mean, like, there's a legit shot he hits like 55, 60 if he goes to Colorado.
Chris Davis territory for sure, if that were the case.
Especially in OBP leagues. Especially. Yeah. My gosh, it would be insane. I'm hoping that happens. Like,
let's make this happen, Rockies. Thinking about it. Let's make Colorado great again. So
can he pitch or
yeah?
I know. Can he pitch? Is he, you know, got a good ground ball rate or? Like, how's he...
I know he's got a good strikeout rate. Let's talk about Sean Rodriguez signing with the Braves. I know this isn't like a super exciting signing, but considering, you know, he had a little bit of a bounce back year last year, and you know, considering what their roster looks like, there is a chance he might get some playing time. So Tim, any thoughts you might be willing to take him cheaply in an NL only?
Yeah, I was gonna say that's kind of the wheelhouse is an NL only for him. Obviously, power spike last year. People might write that off. I'm a part of me thinks it might just be part of a natural progression of a player who's kind of aged into a more consistent role than he has been. He's not really a platoon player anymore. He actually did pretty well versus right-handed pitching last year. He scores the ball. If he had a 43.1 hard contact rate, that would have probably, you know, qualified him among the league leaders if he actually did have a full-time role. You know, the Braves are kind of getting these guys now. They're pushing him a little bit more towards contention because, you know, the new first year of the new stadium, they're getting all these veterans like Bartolo Colon, R.A. Dickey as innings eaters. Now you have Rodriguez as this guy who can kind of, you know, plug around the entire infield there. You know, Donis Garcia might not be the real thing. Jace Peterson probably needs a platoon partner. So, you know, a guy like Rodriguez could get 300-something at-bats, 400 at-bats, pretty good rate there. And even in head-to-head deep mixed leagues, it's a guy you can kind of, you know, plug in if you're doing, like, you know, weekly lineups where he's facing a lot of lefties or something like that. So a couple bucks in NL only, that's actually not a terrible investment to make. I'm afraid there's going to be a lot more people involved in that sidetrack because of last year's power increase that it might not even be worth it and to make it profitable. So while I think that some of last year may be a real step forward, that step forward's probably still not going to be anything all that great.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Sean Rodriguez moving over to Atlanta?
Strong, you know, low dollar NL only play. I completely agree. I feel like I'm agreeing with everything here, but I keep going after Tim. It's messed up. what, you know, everybody really cites, you know, the position eligibility, and, you know, he once again is going to qualify, you know, at first, second, and shortstop at least, you know, going into next year, depending on which format you play in. He might be outfield eligible as well. And there's just a ton of platoon opportunities here for the Braves lineup. You know, you have guys like Matt Kemp that, you know, never stay healthy. You have guys like Nick Markakis that's, you know, a lefty and a full-time player but could use a breather once, you know, once in a while. Jace Peterson was mentioned as a guy that could certainly be a platoon partner at second base. Freddie Freeman, you know, possibly could use a breather every once in a while. Adonis Garcia. So there's a lot of opportunity in this lineup for Rodriguez to, you know, get some time. And, you know, no, is he a 25 home run guy? Absolutely not. But he is somebody in NL only that, it, you know, you can take, you know, much, much later than people, you know, might think. And he might might be able to produce a little bit for you across the board. And he's not somebody, you cited the hard contact. He's somebody that just always has good at bats. You know, he used to be a Tampa Bay Ray, and, you know, that's the way he was kind of built. A really good player that, you know, nobody will really think of drafting, especially in deeper formats. So I'm okay with him in, you know, again, deeper NL onlys if it goes that route.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a playing time issue, but you have to assume that Matt Kemp probably can't play for 600 plate appearances again in the outfield. No DH in the National League. Nick Markakis is always usually pretty good for a DL stint, so there might be a chance for him to break into more than just a super utility role. They do have Malik Smith, but a lot of those pieces could get, you know, a lot of those veteran pieces could get traded too at some point. So I think Rodriguez is a nice NL only, you know, couple dollar buy if Tim is, you know, isn't correct, and, you know, you may actually be able to get him for a couple dollars, because I do see what you're saying in terms of, you know, 18 home runs last year may kind of lend some people to believe, oh, you know, this guy may be worth, you know, $7-8 or more in NL only. So he's a guy to definitely kind of keep on your list as a guy to target late, and if you can grab him, fantastic. But he's definitely nothing more than just a few dollar bids in NL only. All right, let's move on to a couple other guys that we haven't really had a chance to talk about yet this off season. Jaime Garcia is going back to the Cardinals. He did not get free agency. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on Jaime Garcia coming into next year? Is this an NL only guy?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, he saw time in the past. We've always been worried about the injuries with Garcia, but the skills have been solid, especially recently until last year. You know, we really kind of saw the skills kind of erode a bit. He had, you know, an inflated home run to fly ball rate, which I think is going to continue. You know, I think the ground balls are going down a bit as well. We're seeing just everything across the board kind of go down a bit with him, especially in terms of his stuff. You know, the strikeout rate has never been elite, but, you know, I think that he's the type of guy that you can use in head-to-head leagues, especially in 12 teamers, as, you know, a streamer, you know, maybe somebody that you keep on your roster for a few weeks, but he is inevitably going to get injured once again. And I just don't think that his overall skills are the same as they've been in the past. He's not somebody that you can bank on in any way, you know, 4.49 FIP last year. I mean, I just think things are trending in the wrong direction for him. And, you know, he's past the 30-year-old mark here as well. I'm not really interested going forward.
Tim, what are your thoughts on Jaime Garcia?
Yeah, I mean, to me, his skills has always been very volatile. Like, he's had some encouraging signs, but then, like, some signs that if they fall off, that kind of wrecks everything there. So, yeah, it kind of really came to a head last year. Most of all, his positives really just kind of let go. His control rate was, obviously just at barely 3 walks per 9. But for him, it needs to be a lot lower than that, because he's a control-based guy. Usually pounds the strike zone a lot. His first strike rate, one of his lowest rates in his career, below 60%, which is a terrible, thing to sink below for a pitcher with his profile. Yeah, it's just I've always looked at him as maybe a last starting pitcher in a mixed league that you buy. Hopefully everything comes together. But I'm with Mike on this one. I just see a lot of, you know, flaws that I'm not willing to chase anymore. Maybe the ERA kind of evens out between 2015 and 2016, and it's somewhere in the threes. But everything else is going to offer you there is just really not that enticing. So, yeah, I'm not buying any of the reputation he might have had from the earlier portion of this decade. It's just he's not the same type of pitcher anymore.
Yeah, I'm completely done with Jaime Garcia. I bought in May after the first 2 months of the season, and he was looking really, really good and suffered. Didn't even get the DL stint that, you know, usually get from him that at least would have saved my ratios. I just figured he'd turn it around at some point, never did. I agree with you guys. I think part of me thinks there was some sort of injury that he just pitched through last year, because the drop-off was so severe from the first 2 months of the season through the rest of the year. But I'm not willing to, you know, this guy kind of screws you every year. So I think I'm probably out on Jaime Garcia.
Yeah, and that's not to mention, sorry to kind of interrupt, but, you know, you have Alex Reyes in the minors, you know, and you have a couple other minor league starters that they, you know, that the Cardinals have that can easily
they're
kind of
talking
head
about
in there.
Making Rosenthal a starter.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that'll happen, maybe.
Well, I don't think it's going to go well, but they're talking about it.
Yeah, but regardless, the Cardinals always have a plethora of options. You know, they have
just trade Tim Cooney away.
Oh, well, you know.
Well, they're done now.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll make it back from that. But, you know, regardless, you know, they have guys like Luke Weaver as well. I mean, they always have multiple options that aren't necessarily high upside, but can easily slot in for somebody like, you know, I'm sure that they are ready for Jaime Garcia to get injured at any point. So, I mean, there's no reason to draft them.
Don't forget Lance Lynn either, coming back supposedly, you know, this spring. So
can't wait.
That's another big name.
That's a big value name.
I don't know if I'm going to trust that one coming out the gate. But, I mean, I'm looking over here at Roster Resource, and they have Michael Wacha in their bullpen. Do you think that is actually going to happen?
It could.
I think it'll be a battle among a couple of guys, for sure.
I mean, he was god-awful last year.
He was atrocious. And just, even in the bullpen, he wasn't very good.
But they'll give him a shot. I mean, they're not going to go into the season without letting Wacha prove that he can, you know, possibly be somebody that goes into the rotation. So, I mean, I right now I'd say he's a nice buy low in case he does figure things out a bit.
All right. What about Jeremy Hellickson? He took the qualifying offer, one of the few guys to actually do that. Tim, what are your thoughts on Hellickson returning to Philadelphia?
Well, I don't like to think about Jeremy Hellickson all that much. You know, last year was supposed to be his good year, and he still ended up with a 3.71 ERA. You know, the home park numbers were actually pretty decent. Maybe there's something to go into with that, and obviously facing, you know, National League teams has been better for him since his Rays career. But there's just so much about this guy, about the home run allowance, about how he's usually around the strike zone so much, and he's not really an overpowering guy. That's not a profile I like buying into, and he was definitely dependent on, you know, wins for a lot of his value last year, which is saying something for a Phillies team, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how much can you trust him to have that infield fly ball rate of 14.3% that high again? I mean, the fly ball rate did go down, but I just think, you know, it's more so just going to be a correction of things, and he's just too much of a fly ball pitcher with that much velocity or dominance to really, you know, count on for long term. So, you know, if you had him last year, that's your kudos to that he got something out of him a little bit. But no, I'm going to let other people do, you know, buy into what little improvement that he showed last year.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Hellickson, the former Ray?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with that. I do think that he's a sneaky name. Do I think he does exactly what he did last season? No. But, you know, you cited the home ERA at 3.16. That's great, especially, you know, in a park that it really is better for hitters than it is pitchers. No, he's not going to continue that, you know, infield fly ball rate. But, you know, overall, he's continuously, you know, keeping that 20% or so strikeout rate intact. His xFIP was the best of his career, except for in 2010, which, you know, he's always been a guy that's kind of outperformed that a bit. But, you know, at least this going into this year, I think that he's somebody that's at least a bit stable. No, he doesn't have a ton of upside, and I still think he's more of an NL-only play than somebody that you can use in a mixer. But I do think that he's serviceable, and I you know, if we're drafting today, I would take him ahead of Jaime Garcia, and it's not really close.
Yeah,
okay,
I mean,
sure, I'll give you that.
Yeah, I'd take him ahead of Jaime Garcia, but I mean, I worry about the park. You know, you quote the home ERA, but how sustainable is that in Philadelphia with the division all around getting better? You know, each year, to me, he doesn't exhibit the kind of the total package of a starter I want in an NL only, because in NL only you can't really risk getting bombed out every month by a guy. So you know, your ratios get destroyed like that. So I mean, maybe at the back end of a 15 team mix, he's a guy, you know, that I'm willing to take a shot on. But NL only, I think he's too risky, and there's not enough upside, especially in a wins league. For me. Go ahead.
Okay, those fringe guys can hurt you more in the mono leagues, even more so than mixed leagues, because you have, you know, less time to and less ability to recover if they really get bombed out at that point, because, you know, your replacement value is not that high, not that appropriate in a single universe league.
Yeah, exactly. It just, you know, sometimes we look at these guys like, oh, they're good for NL only, and sometimes they're not really good for NL only. They're better for the real deep mix than they are NL only, because you have a couple bad outings from a guy like Hellickson, and you're really trailing in WHIP and ERA.
Well, he did have a career high in soft contact last year, which, you know, tells me that his pitch mix has changed a bit. And, you know, it did. You know, he started throwing his four seam a lot less last season in 2016 than he has in any other year. I mean, just to, you know, look at the year prior, he stayed above 50% the majority of the year. And then, you know, in 2016, he stayed pretty much, you know, 40% or under the entire season. So he kind of implemented a sinker a lot more. And he, you know, has always had a devastating changeup, which he also used a ton as well. So, I mean, not something that's going to lend to a ton of strikeouts, but it is kind of telling to me that the soft contact is that high and that the home ERA is that low. Maybe that's just some strategically what he's doing at home to kind of keep the home runs in check.
All right. Let's move on and talk about Wilson Ramos. We don't know quite where he's going to be, but I've heard some people say that they're still willing to take him within the top 10 of catchers next year. I think it's a little insane for me. Mike, what are your thoughts on Wilson Ramos?
I would like to know more, you know, updates in terms of what his health is going to look like. In terms of what he did last year, I'm insanely high on him because I think it's something that can't continue. He always had that kind of eye issue, and then he got that corrected, and he ended up exploding. He was the number three catcher in terms of earnings, according to, you know, ESPN's player rater. At the end of the day, it's more something that if I'm drafting now, I certainly would not take him early, but I do think that he's a top five catcher if the health is fine. You know, he dropped down on his strikeout percentage. No, he's not an over 300 hitter, but he is somebody that I think with those skills that he showed last season can be a 275 or higher. And I just think that he's the type of guy that can, you know, be a top five catcher going forward. Now, with that said, the catcher position as a whole is just so terrible. And I think people are going to spend so high on guys like Gary Sanchez, maybe Wilson Ramos as well, that it might lead to a little bit of value for guys like Buster Posey, who used to be going borderline first round, that obviously won't be going there going forward. And, you know, Wilson Contreras is the world. Those guys will be going high. I think that it's a better strategy to wait on catcher, just like it's always been. And, you know, wait on a guy like maybe even Brian McCann or Russell Martin, just these old, you know, guys in the position that people have kind of forgotten about or just aren't shiny or sexy names at the moment. So to answer the question, no, I would not take him that high, but I do believe in him going forward, barring hell.
Tim, what are your thoughts on Ramos?
Yeah, I'm kind of with the same boat of Mike there. I think it really depends on the room and how they value catchers to see where you go with Wilson Ramos. I mean, he's someone I'm definitely like watching really carefully to bump up in rankings as, you know, we see more of what he might be able to do in the spring or what he might be able to do in extended spring training, something like that. I mean, you got to watch for the power though, because obviously, you know, knee injury, you know, lower body definitely affects power. If that comes back slow, that could be a big issue. And obviously if you spend a lot on a catcher like that, replacement value in a league that might not be strong, then you know, a little bit of a sunken cost investment there. But, you know, the guy hits the ball hard. He's always kind of had that, you know, that big loft for a catcher. You just want him to get more playing time and fewer bad things to happen to him, I guess, injury wise. And, you know, the batting average is going to be buoyed by the way he hits the ball hard, is because his batting eye is not very good even after the LASIK surgery. But yeah, absolutely. I think there's a top five catcher profile when all said and done here, if he can play, you know, give you 400 or so plate appearances, you know, that where that middle, you know, lower end tier of the first fantasy catchers kind of gets to be a little muddy. Ramos looks like a guy that'll stand out. If that whole catcher position in a mixed league does kind of, you know, shift down towards like picks, you know, 100 or so, you get some of the top guys there. And if you can get Ramos to like a 150 overall type of thing, that would be great. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, unless he ends up on an American League team, and I think all of the reports have had him just re-signing with the Nationals for a long-term deal, I'm probably going to be out on him because I want him to DH some. And I just don't – I mean, that was a devastating knee injury. I know reports have come out in the last couple weeks saying that his agents are saying that he should be a full-time catcher by May. That seems like tradecraft to me. That seems like I'm trying to get my guy a better deal, because I wouldn't expect him to be back before, you know, probably the All-Star break at best. And who knows, you know, how long he can catch, you know, on a surgically repaired knee. So I'm less optimistic about Ramos. Let's do a quick would you rather for catchers for next year with Wilson Ramos. Would you rather have Wilson Ramos or JT Realmuto?
Ramos.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. Realmuto's safer for sure, but less of a difference maker in my opinion.
All right, I'd take Realmuto. Ramos or Evan Gattis. With like 30-something home runs last year.
Yeah. I'm going to go Ramos still.
Wow.
In regular 5x5.
Sure, I'll agree with that.
Well, I'm going Gattis. I think this is Gary.
You're low on Ramos.
Yeah, I am. Gary Sanchez or Ramos?
You got to ride the Gary Sanchez, Sanchez train. Of
Sanchez.
Wilson Contreras or Sanchez or Wilson Contreras or Ramos?
Ramos for me.
Less for me, but I'll say Ramos still closer. I think in my eyes.
See, yeah. Maybe I'm just way too low on him. I'm just so afraid of the injury and what it's going to take for him to actually be back behind the plate full time. So,
I think your comparison tells you everything. Like, a lot of those guys are close, and if we get a ton of glowing reports on Ramos's health heading into 2017, then his value is going to be a lot higher than Evan Gattis, and maybe not, you know, Wilson Contreras, but, you know, Real Muto for sure. And Real Muto adds those stolen bases and hits for a fine batting average as well. So I think the main point is that the catcher value isn't it doesn't have as big of a gap as we're making it seem when, you know, picking between these players.
Yeah. Ask me again in March. How about that?
Yeah,
we will have you back on again in March just to ask you that question.
By the way, you remember Tim?
Oh, I hate Wilson Ramos. All I want is Real Muto, and so I never liked that guy.
So stable. Real Muto is the best.
Let's talk about a guy who disappointed quite a number of fantasy owners, me included. That's Lorenzo Cain. Really did not live up to where he was drafted. Mike, I know you were a big kind of poo-pooer of Lorenzo Cain, so go ahead. What are your thoughts on him for this year?
I love him this year, and you want to know why? Because I didn't like him last year because he's always had health risk, and he was just going too high for me. But if he didn't get hurt last season, he would have put up very comparable numbers. I mean, in 2015, he was a top five outfielder, according to ESPN's Player Rater. Last year, he ended up 50th, but I think that was a complete result in him not playing a full season. His home run to fly ball rate, I thought it would dip a ton. It dipped, you know, 2% approximately. It went from 11% to 9.5% last year, but he still, you know, stole 14 bases. I think if he plays a full year, he's a lock to steal over 20, probably more than the 25 to even possibly 30 range. Again, barring health, has always hit for batting average. There's nothing, you know, different in his profile that tells me he won't continue to do that. And, you know, again, I still think the home runs are going to be close, if not, you know, about the same as what he did in 2015 as well, you know, barring health. So I still love Lorenzo Cain as a player. If he is going to go in a more affordable price, like in the eighth round or so, I'm absolutely on board with that, especially like mid-teens price and auction. I think that there's a massive bargain opportunity here with Lorenzo Cain. And, you know, like if he goes above or below somebody like Adam Jones, for instance, I think that that's an absolute steal. And there's going to be a ton of examples just like that where I think it's going to go in favor of Cain.
Tim, what are your thoughts on Cain?
Everything Mike just said, actually. I just love the market correction that's going to come from this. Definitely, you know, cheaper price. I believe everything is stable about him except for the injuries. You know, yeah, I'm buying all the way.
Yeah, I can't agree with you guys more. I mean, I was a big proponent of him last year. I kind of lost out because of the injuries, but I still believe in the skill set. I still believe in the player. And as long as he can stay healthy, I think he's going to offer, you know, quality numbers. And this year, you don't have to pay for that. This year, you can, you know, pay for what he put up this last season, and hope that he can maybe put together another 2015, and you really make a ton of profits. So yeah, Cain is going to be on probably about 75% of my teams coming into 2017. Rossiel Iglesias, is he a starter? Is he a reliever? And do you care, Tim?
I absolutely do care. I was on his train heading into last year as a starting pitcher. You know, I don't know how the heck Tony Cingrani kind of grinded out most of the saves in that Reds bullpen. The way his peripherals are just so ugly. I guess they could play well as a reliever in small sample size. But I want Iglesias. It's one of those guys where I think you don't necessarily need to know which role he's going to be in, because the skills will play, I think, either way for him. He kind of adapted pretty well to you know, to each role. Regardless, he got the stuff to do either way. Obviously, the velocity plays up in the bullpen as well. Great strikeout ability. Just needs to learn maybe how to pound the strike zone a bit more. But, you know, this kind of, you know, we've seen examples of this every year where you don't know if a guy's going to be a closer, he's going to be a starter, but you get him late in the mixed draft and you just have the strikeout potential there and he could, you know, play as a starter or a reliever. I think Iglesias, either way for me, is going to be a very enticing guy you can get late in drafts. You just kind of hope that maybe they're not making him the closer, you know, right out of camp. Maybe he's, you know, maybe it's still kind of a battle with Cingrani that can keep his price low a little bit.
Mike, what about Iglesias for you? Do you care if he's a starter or a reliever? Are you buying it all?
Yeah, I do care because I think that his name is still going to carry a ton of weight in drafts. He was an absolute star last year after he transitioned over to the bullpen. You know, he put up almost 10 strikeouts per nine, a 1.98 ERA. That did come with an 86% left on base rate, but, you know, limited the home runs well, which is really good for a guy that's pitching in Great American Ballpark. The walks are pretty solid for a guy that's going to be in the bullpen. I love everything about him in terms of being a high upside reliever. He has the type of stuff that can kind of, you know, be in comparison with somebody like Andrew Miller, maybe not to that magnitude, but he can be that good if he is the closer. The question is whether we can bank on the Reds on being kind of smart and intelligent with this decision and putting him in the closer role. In my opinion, you know, their bullpen still is the same as it was last year. They haven't made any moves quite yet to, you know, bolster that area of their team. As of right now, I would look at it, you know, if I'm drafting tomorrow, I'm looking at it as Iglesias is the closer for them. And if he is a closer, I'm going to put him as a top 5 to 7 guy. And Yeah, if I consider him the closer, yeah. And so, which is kind of comparable to where he went last year, right? I mean, where was he going last year? Off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember.
150s, probably ADP, 150s. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was reaching for him in a lot of them. I was boosting his ADP last year. So
last year, he was the top 150 pick, exactly. He was going behind guys like Jake Odorizzi, James Shields, for instance, Jordan Zimmermann, Francisco Liriano, you know, Michael Wacha. I feel like if his price, if he is the closer going in, or I consider him that way, if he's going 150 again, I feel better about his value going into next year. It really is barring whether they put him in that role or not. As of right now, I don't think that they can go any other route. They have to put him as the closer.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you, Mike. I'm not quite as high on Iglesias if he is the closer, but if he is the closer, I think he's a top 10, 12 guys, so, you know, a number one closer in 12-team mixed leagues. I really like the stuff in the bullpen more than in the rotation. I just don't know if he's ever a guy that I'm going to feel comfortable is going to be able to give me six, start after start. So I prefer to see him in the bullpen. I think he could have some dominant stuff that plays up pretty well there. I think we saw it towards the end of the season that in the short spurts that he was extremely dominant. So I think he's a guy that if he is kind of going, I don't know, inside, you know, just inside the top 200, top 175 as a closer, I think he's a nice value. You know, the only thing you worry about is, will the Reds win enough games to give him enough save opportunities? But more than likely, they're only going to win by one or two runs when they do win. So all you need to do is let him get to 40 wins, and, you know, he could get, you know, 35 save opportunities. So I like Iglesias as long as he is in the bullpen. If he's a starter, I'm out. I just don't believe he is a starter long term.
One thing going in his favor, though, is the Reds, you know, obviously were the team that acquired Aroldis Chapman, and they figured out pretty fast that he was best served in the bullpen as their closer. I mean,
well,
you would
defined
that,
pretty fast, because we went through a number of seasons of
well, we've
blank.
Gone through.
Well, there's Iglesias' third season, though. So,
yeah, exactly.
So,
like, they've went
plenty
through
of
time.
Sample there.
Exactly. They've realized, I think they've, if we've realized as a fantasy community that he likely cannot start, then I think that they have too.
I mean, I think it'll probably come down for them what they feel the strength of the rotation is. If they feel like they can get by with the five they've got in there right now, you know, I know there's been a lot of talks that they're looking at moving Dan Straley. I'm sure they'd love to get rid of Homer Bailey's contract, or at least part of it. So, you know, I mean, if they end up moving those two guys before the start of the season, we could see them try to put Iglesias back into the rotation, which I think would be a mistake for me.
Well, they could switch Robert Stevenson to closer then, because he's got very good stuff as well that would play up much better in the bullpen.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it's time they actually give him a legitimate shot at a major league roster spot, because he's been toiling in the minor leagues for way too long. All right, let's talk about our last guy. That's the last Cardinal. Matt missed out on both these guys. Jed Jericho. He had a power spike this year, as did the majority of the league. Are we buying it, though, Tim?
I don't know about 30 home runs in that amount of at-bats. That was a pretty fast rate for him, obviously. You know, St. Louis's home park, you know, not the greatest for power. Most of, he hit 18 of his 30 home runs on the road. But I think it had to be the quietest 30 home run season I remember, I would think, right? I mean, no one really made a huge deal about this thing. And Jericho obviously made a living on power. That's why fantasy people, you know, they love him all over the place back in the day. And they realized, oh, wait, he can't, you know, hit a breaking ball. So, you know, I don't love him as much anymore. So I just think that this kind of you decrease the pace of home runs that he was going to hit, you know, that we saw last year. You know, get him a 20 homer season for like, you know, 450, 500 bats, something like that normally. He's probably got the inside track with, you know, on third base, depending on if Johnny Peralta actually can, you know, get back to being useful there. And but obviously Jericho can kind of slot in at a bunch of other places around the infield. So there are opportunities for him to contribute there. Don't draft him for batting average, but just, you know, get him late for power, even though, you know, hopefully as a corner infielder, you might get more use out of him, because middle infielder, if you draft him for the power and not get, you know, if he gives you nothing else, then that's kind of, you know, a little bit of a wasted spot there.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Jericho?
Yeah, I, you know, pretty much agree with all of that. Once again, he's, you know, the second half was kind of crazy for him, right? He put up a top five ISO among any hitters, not just at his position. You know, he put up a home run to fly ball rate, almost 30%. There's no way that continues. And I mean, Tim did a great job of, you know, highlighting that he's not a batting average asset, and he never will be. He's the type of guy that if you get a 240, 250, you know, batting average from, then you pretty much got a win there. And I do think that he's more of a 20 home run guy, not necessarily a 30 home run guy. He's still, you know, fairly young. I mean, 28. So we're still experiencing his prime years, and he does have eligibility at multiple places. I'm just trying to gauge where he might go in drafts at this point, because, you know, last year he was going way late, you know, outside of top, you know, the 300th pick or so. I think this year we're going to see, you know, him spike up, and to that degree is where I'm kind of concerned. You know, if we see him going as a top 200 player, that's where I'm kind of drawing the line. If I can get him at 225 or later as a single dollar pick, maybe $6 or $7, maybe $5, you know, would be more appropriate, then I'm all in for that. But you know, power is something that, you know, with the juiced ball era is what I'm gonna call it now, I think that we can bank, I think we can bank on a little more power from places. I mean, for God's sakes, Brian Dozier hit like 40 home runs last year, people. I mean, there's something going on. So I think that we can get power later on in drafts is my point. So I'm not going to spend a lot to get Jorko, while I do think he did well last year, and it will continue at a decent clip. It's just not going to continue at the same pace he had in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to continue at the same pace, but I think we could actually pencil him in for more at-bats than we're used to seeing. So, I mean, you know, they can move Wong to the outfield. He played a little bit in the outfield to give Jericho more opportunity at second base. Like you guys said, I think he's got third base locked down full time, but I think he's a guy who can still play all over the infield. I think we can pencil him in for almost 600 plate appearances this year, which is something he's never done in his career before, you know, barring injury. I think he's a guy that could approach 25 home runs again. You know, I'm not going to pencil him in for 30, but I think 25 is pretty fair. And if you're getting him outside the top 175, I think that's a pretty decent value for a guy who could be a nice little, you know, super utility since he has second, third, and shortstop eligibility coming into 2017. I like guys like that can move around, that offer, you know, a nice power potential at a number of different positions, especially later on, especially in your 12-team leagues, because, you know, you're always looking for injury replacements and off-day replacements, and I think Jericho can be that guy for people. So I'm actually, you know, I expect a little bit of regression in the power department, but not a ton, and I think he is going to be a decent value on draft day.
Yeah, here's my thing too, though. I don't know if we can pencil in 600 at bats just because, like, they have so many guys that play different. I mean, what are they going to do with the Greg Garcias of the world? What are they going to do with Johnny Peralta? What are they going to do with, you know, Jorko in that, you know, scenario? What are they going to do with Elidmus Diaz? What are they going to do with Wong? What are they going to do with Matt Adams? And I mean, right now they have on roster resource Matt Carpenter slide in to play first base, but I mean, I'm sure that they would play Matt Adams when a righty is up. And what does that do with Jorko in that situation? I just think that the Cardinals have a lot of moving pieces that we don't quite know yet. So I think just right
but
now,
they don't have a ton of those pieces in the out. They don't have a ton of those pieces in the outfield, and you can move. You can move a guy like
Wong to the outfield.
Wong to the outfield to open up that spot.
Which so. Wong, I think is going to be one of the guys that you can get at an extreme value, you know, going into this year. But that's off the point.
I just worry Wong is going to end up being a platoon guy.
Well, he's top side at least though.
Yeah.
So.
True. But what you do mention is a great point. If he were to get 600 bats, sure, he could hit 30 home
and
runs.
And I said play appearances, not at bats. But
play appearances, my bad. But yeah, regardless, if he gets another 150 at bat or at plate appearances than he did last year, we could see him hit 30 again. And that's still kind of factoring in the regression that would come from him not having such a big second half.
I mean, if you look at their projected lineup on roster resource, I mean, do we really buy that Tommy Pham is the solution in the outfield for them? You know, how much is Colton Wong really going to play if he struggles again? Don't we expect Diaz to take some sort of step back? I think there's going to be plenty of playing time for Jerko going forward.
I hope so. Yeah. Well, like you said, the rate's going to go down, but you know, if we get hints of what they're projecting for his playing time, then maybe that'll change a little bit. But I don't know. It's just, you know, single. Like Mike was saying, you know, single category power guys, I think they're getting a little bit less less of a surcharge going right now. I think we need more of the single category speed guys to really kind of balance that out a little bit in terms of market value.
Yeah, I wish he would steal something. I mean, even if he just offered 5 stolen bases this season, it would be a nice little added part to his value. But he hasn't stolen anything in the last two seasons. So,
well, the Cardinals, you know. Maybe they'll run a bit more. You know, they have some guys that do kind of chip in a little bit more. And like you said, if with more plate appearances, maybe he'll find himself in more spots to run.
They're good offense, too. Like last year at home in particular, they were like a top three offense. So, I mean, they have the pieces to be that way.
Yeah. That is going to wrap us up for the podcast today. Tim, thank you for joining us.
Guys, this was really fun. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on in season next year or even in the preseason in 2017. But definitely go ahead and give yourself some more plugs. Tell people where they can reach you on Twitter and, again, what you do over at RotoWire.
Just a reminder, Twitter at Tim_Heaney, HEANEY. You can find us on Twitter again at RotoWire, where I'm the social media manager, a podcast host, and I do a little bit of writing as well. I'm actually chipping in on the initial 2017 fantasy baseball composite rankings at RotoWire with a lot of great minds, a lot of people will be butting heads with over the next couple months. It's going to be fun to watch that. You know, go ahead with guys like Jeff Erickson, Todd Zola, Derek Van Riper, Clay Link, just some, you know, good people that I'm going to be arguing with a lot. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Hope you can join us for that. Obviously, you can sign up for a free 10-day trial as well at RotoWire. You can peek around at everything. If you're still in fantasy football, if you guys do that in this station or all that, you guys can, you know, poke around for a couple weeks of rankings at that. You know, I'm doing a little bit of football as well there. So, yeah, and if you listen to football, you can catch me on a podcast every Friday. So, hope you guys can join us over at RotoWire.
Definitely will. Mike, tell people where you can reach, what you're working on.
Yeah, thanks again, Tim, for coming on. It was a pleasure, sir. And, yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out all the stuff that's going on friendswithfantasybenefits.com. We are continuing to do the baseball podcast over the offseason. We still have football going on. We have the DFS show with myself and Sasha Salinger, if I can ever pronounce that right. And I still do all my little blurbs for fantasypros.com as well. Baseball HQ, I'm going to continue to write for them next season, and there might be some more in store as well, so check it all out.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. Please leave us a rate and review on the podcast. Definitely helps us out, especially if it's of the 5-star variety, moving up the rankings little by little, so that is good for us. Let's see. Definitely check me out on the football podcast with Mike. We have a basketball podcast that has started up and is going strong with Ben, Eric, Mike, or sorry, no, Eli and John. So definitely check those out. You can subscribe for that on iTunes as well as Stitcher and any other podcast aggregator. And then, yeah, definitely check out everything we got going on at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. And then I also write for FanGraphs for baseball, so definitely check out my content over there. I've been a little lazy this offseason with my baseball writing, so hopefully we'll get back into that here pretty quickly. All right, that will wrap us up. For Tim and Mike, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball offseason.